The Hawk is on the air, broadcasting 24/7 from the top of the Niagara Escarpment.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Thanks so much for tuning in again tonight. I'm Sarah Jessica, and this is Hot Shots on Air, as always. And tonight I'm hanging out with Benjamin Van Buskirk. He's the Toronto-based vocalist behind alternative rock duo Blackout Orchestra. You can find Ben on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Bandcamp, and all streaming services under Blackout Orchestra. So, hey, thanks so much for jumping in and talking to me today.
My pleasure. Thanks very much for having me on.
Yeah, of course. Anytime. I guess just to start everything off, who would you say are your biggest musical influences?
That is a question that always makes me sound really pretentious.
Sure.
I suppose if I was to like try to narrow it down, I listen to a lot of music in mm-hmm. a lot of genres.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the career that I would strive towards, like a lot of people would say, I guess, would be Radiohead.
Mm-hmm.
I just love that they've consistently evolved. They've never necessarily repeated themselves while they're also, it doesn't seem forced. It doesn't seem like they are just trying to take a left turn for the sake of it. They're doing what they're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of when I'm actually making music, I sort of let the song that I'm working on at the time tell me. So I've been working on our next record, where a lot of the, I thought it was going to be a stripped down acoustic record, and I was listening to a lot of 90s hip hop, so it became somewhat beat oriented as well. But I've been listening to really slow, kind of bad Phoebe Bridgers and Julian Baker stuff lately, so that's definitely in there too. And then I am always listening to Bjork, so I was like, I have to try working on some string arrangements and some choirs, except the choirs are just me and then Morgan. But,
oh, yeah.
You know, trying different things like that. And so it really just depends on what that particular song needs to sound like, and mixing up a lot of those influences. I couldn't pin it down really to just one thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. How would you describe your sound as an artist, and how do those influences impact that sound?
I would like to, I don't want to pigeonhole too much, but we're definitely, you know, sad sack rock and roll to a large degree. And that's mm-hmm. just by nature of a lot of those influences and a lot of sort of what I take from the music that I listen to, which is that I find it very therapeutic.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm feeling great and on top of my game and the world's going well for me, I don't necessarily feel the need to write, because it's not something I feel like I need to examine.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, the majority of the output of what we write makes me sound like I'm horribly sad all the time, because that's when I need to write and that's when I need to get it out of me and sort of examine what I'm feeling and get to the bottom of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's similar with all the artists that I've been influenced by, and most of the music that I love, is that it just comes from a raw place, I think, emotionally. And, you know, sometimes that can be joyful, but more often than not, that's sad or maybe a little bit angsty.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, definitely. Do you remember what you listened to as a kid, or what music you grew up with in your household? And do you think that has an impact on your current style? And do you still keep some of those major influences?
Do Definitely. So I'm growing up, my parents were rock and roll hippies, and I did something mm-hmm. that listening to the Beatles and the Stones and Joni Mitchell and all of that growing up definitely had an influence, I think, on just aesthetically, maybe to a certain degree, like the type of music that I ended up listening to, even though I would have at the time said it was a rejection of what my parents listened to, like as a teenager, you're always going to say that. But I think that was part of it. And then when I started getting into music myself, the thing that I first started listening to was largely movie scores, where it was really dramatic and instrumental and impactful. And I listened to them outside of the movies. And even if the movies were terrible, if the score was good, I would want to pick it up on CD and the record man and listen to it over and over again. So I think that that became something that, again, it carried over into my later tastes and even the music that I decided to start making. But I guess in terms of like early influences of my own when it comes to pop songs and rock and roll, the band that influenced me most was Nirvana, just because the idea of putting like two or three chords together and just either screaming your head off or even just pouring out whatever emotion you're going through at the time over top of it, and suddenly you have a song. It hadn't really occurred to me with like a lot of very produced music, but when it came to hearing Nirvana and bands like that that were much more raw and it sounded like something you could do in your basement, it made me realize that maybe this is something that I could try. And it's been, that's been the journey ever since, is trying to capture that kind of, again, I'm going to sound pretentious, but that kind of authenticity, I think, in terms of expressing what you're feeling.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Do you remember when you first discovered music?
Oh, I can't pinpoint it to any particular memory because
sure,
it was just always a part of my life. It was my grandfather was a jazz musician. My mother would play the flute. My dad would play records nonstop. I have no way of of imagining life without music or before music, so I can't really pinpoint where would it began with me in that way.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember when you first kind of heard music or heard an album or a specific song and thought, oh, wow, I want to make that?
I think it was probably... It wasn't a band per se, but it ties in with the Nirvana.
Mm-hmm.
Discovering Nirvana. I sort of discovered Nirvana and was getting it that. And I traveled with my family down to, we have family in St. John, New Brunswick. And one of my cousins was dating this guy, Justin, who I'm still friends with, but I met him on that trip. And he was in the band, but we were sitting around a campfire and he just had an acoustic guitar and was playing first just Nirvana songs acoustically and then some of his own songs that he had written. And that's when it kind of, that was the clarifying, crystallizing moment of oh, you can write your own songs. And his songs sounded as good as Nirvana songs, and they were all just done with this acoustic guitar at a campfire. And it hadn't, I don't know how, but it hadn't dawned on me that, oh, you can write a song.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of that really came together in kind of a melting pool all at once, over that sort of one summer. And it just so happened when I got back from New Brunswick, a friend of mine in high school had gotten a drum set for his birthday. And I was like, well, I have a guitar. You have a drum set. We're a band now. Let's start a band.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the spirit right there. So, you know, I know that you're the vocalist of Blackout Orchestra and you play some guitar. Do you play any other instruments?
I do. All the instruments that I play badly.
Mm-hmm.
But enough to sort of get by. So I do play piano, just not very well. A little bit of mandolin, not very well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm learning violin, not very well. And bass guitar, which is kind of comes naturally with learning guitar. You pick up the very basics of bass, but then it's like it takes a little more time to become an actually good bass player because it's its whole other thing.
Mm-hmm.
But so I play all of those instruments to some degree, and I would say the same about like my singing. I think I'm not the world's greatest singer or guitar player either, but I think that I sort of put myself through it because I think there's a certain realness that comes with singing the words that you wrote and you being the person who can sort of relive and reinterpret those memories or feelings. Really the only reason that I have taken sort of a front row with this project as opposed to letting Morgan, who's a much better singer and who interprets things beautifully, but I still feel the need to sing the songs a lot of the time because it seems to me that it's almost more authentic. And I think that that's probably not fair to vocalists. I think a good singer is like a great actor who brings something out of the page that wasn't there on the page. But it's just kind of a hang-up that I can't let go of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that makes sense, yeah. When did you start singing?
I started that high school band, that's when I started technically singing, but I wouldn't really call it that. It was punk rock, it was screaming. It wasn't until I got into some more technically proficient singers like Tom York and like Bjork and Kate Bush and people like that, that I started really actually thinking about the voice as a little bit more versatile an instrument. So it's really with this project where I first started trying to use my voice well. And I've recently started taking vocal lessons for that reason because I was brushing up against my own limitations and I needed to find a way to push past that. But it's something I was kind of scared to actually try to sing in a non punk rock kind of sloppy, screamy fashion up until putting together this first batch of songs with Black Air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. Yeah. When did you start creating music, and do you happen to remember the first song that you wrote?
It was it probably would have been 1996-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Back when I was kid starting that first band, and we literally put two chords together, the two chord song, and it was not the most lyrically proficient song we ever wrote, or I've ever written, but it's it was two chords. It was called Jesus Got a Haircut, and it was largely screaming the F word over and over again for the chorus.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
You know, but we were teenagers. We did, it's something we needed to get out of us, apparently.
Yeah, for sure. Do you remember when you began to look at music as something more than a hobby?
I think it was when some iteration of that band. We went through different members and things like that, but we started playing some all-ages shows because we were too young to play any of the bars downtown Toronto or anything. You know, we just go and play these Battle of the Bands and sing our hearts out, and it was just kind of fun. But at a certain point, people actually started showing up for the show, and people started knowing some of the words, and, you know, it was our peers, it was our other kids from other high schools and stuff, but the fact that people seemed to be interested in what we were doing and that they felt something from what we were doing, that we weren't just like screaming at a wall, but maybe we were communicating in the same way bands would be liked or communicating with their audiences. It made it seem like something that I personally really wanted to just tap into that. It was a feeling like I had never felt before, and it felt like I was doing something, I guess, good in the world. Although that sounds a little grand, it was the first time I felt that maybe I was contributing something. It wasn't just living this weird solitary existence, and that was really something that became kind of addictive.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. Did you study music or take like professional lessons?
Not at all. Yeah. Probably why I'm not great at any of those instruments.
Oh, that's fine. We all start somewhere.
Yeah, pretty much. I got a beat up guitar from a garage sale, and started trying to pick out how to play songs. And eventually I made a deal with my dad where if I saved up half the money, he would pay for the other half to buy an actual electric guitar.
Right.
And, once I got that, I started, bugging my friends who had internet because we didn't have the internet to print out guitar tabs for me for 9-inch nails and stuff like that. Just really like whatever I was listening to at the time, I needed to know how to play it. And very, very slowly, but you know, like all the sort of rock history books talk about, you know, you spend hours and hours a day for years in your bedroom with your headphones on playing guitar. And eventually I got figured out more or less what I was doing that way.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. How did your family and friends react to you pursuing music?
I wish I had a cool story about how, you know, my family, they were saying, you're never going to make anything of yourself, but I persevered and all that. But my parents were, like, very liberal arts parents,
mm-hmm.
Who were very actually supportive, and they were just like, yeah, as long as you're going to actually stick to it, just we'll support it. So they, you know, they listened to my screamy tapes and they'd come to our, you know, high school screamy shows. And I'm sure my mom once referred to it as like, you know, it's really hard going to your shows sometimes because it's kind of like reverse labor. You're screaming and screaming at me and it's weird. She was still very supportive of it. My mom helped me make flyers for our shows and things like that. I have no complaints about that. They were and are just sort of my mom is still like my biggest fan and most supportive, and she'll critique things. I'll send her songs and she'll come back and be like, I think the harmony should be a little louder. I think the drums are too loud on that one. Maybe you should bring them down. And I'm like, well, I don't know, mom, but maybe I'll think about it.
That's so sweet. I love that. So nice to hear.
And my friends at the time, they were very supportive. It gets harder, I think, actually, as you get older. I think when you're young and you're playing in bands, your friends are excited because your friends are playing in bands and they get to go to these shows.
Yeah.
And I think as you get older and you get sort of, you know, your grown-up jobs and your responsibilities, it's harder to get friends interested in what you're doing. And to be as interested in what they're doing musically just due to a lack of time. I still find myself voraciously swallowing every new piece of new independent music I can find, but I understand why that's sort of a luxury and a weird passion and addiction that I have, that a lot of friends, as you get older, they have lives, they have kids, they have jobs, and they have a mortgage, and they don't have space to think about your little bedroom pop project necessarily. But thankfully it's been the music community that are, you know, big weirdos like me who are just extremely painfully passionate about new music all the time and have a hunger that can't be fed that then get into what we're doing, and then it's this nice copacetic relationship.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. What do you think are the major ways your music has changed since you first started writing?
I think I've learned and continue to learn the value of subtlety. You know, when in punk rock bands, it's all about making a loud statement at that moment. And it's often about some very, intense, you know, aggressive emotion. And I think as I've gotten older and just the things emotions that I feel and the situations I have in my life have gotten more complex. I think the way I write about them hopefully has gotten a little more nuanced. And musically, I think it's largely the same thing, whereas it was like I used to need pounding drums and loud guitars, but now it's the gentlest sounds, the most, I don't know, sometimes strange bounce sounds, whatever it is, it whatever suits that song can be very, very individualized to that song or that feeling or that emotion. It's just a wider vocabulary musically for things that I want to express. And then it's just sort of repeat myself at this point. It really is just like finding the nuance, finding subtlety and knowing when to be subtle and when to be intense, and the dynamic range between. It's the most fun thing for me at this point.
Yeah, yeah. No, I totally get you, yeah. Did you grow up in Toronto?
Sort of. I grew up in Scarborough, which is technically part of Toronto, although, I mean, a lot of people might argue otherwise. So most of my life I spent in the strip malls in the suburbs. But pretty early on, in my sort of early teen years, my life started happening. It was in downtown Toronto. That's where we were playing these all-ages shows at clubs. That's where all my friends that I was meeting were. And that's where, I think most importantly, that's where all the record stores were. So
right.
I would hop on the subway, basically, and be gone every day that I could.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Why stay in Toronto?
It's just a city. I've talked about this with some friends before and everything. It's a lot of people I know have moved out of Toronto. A lot of people, especially, have like moved to Vancouver or to Montreal, and for valid reasons. But I love this city. I like how multicultural it is. I like how the art scene has, and the music scene and the theater scene all have really a lot of variation. There's a little bit of a space for anything you might want to see or hear. It feels like the biggest small town in the world in a lot of ways. And familiarity can sometimes, you know, it's not always a good thing, but there's something about the fact that I know almost every nook and cranny of Toronto, at least in my general area, the sort of Midtown and West and to some degree the East End, that it's like, I just know how the spaces that I exist in make me feel. That's a little esoteric, but everything that I've ever sort of needed or craved is somewhere available in this city, so I've never really felt all that excited to leave it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, honestly, especially being an artist, it kind of has everything you need.
Yeah, it's like, and I can understand the idea that it is sort of rat racy, and that, you know, in the art scene sometimes there's a lot of competition, but I've found that's really only in sort of in some aspect of it. I think there's a huge amount of support for the art from young, struggling artists themselves supporting each other a lot of the time. That is, I think it's because there's this sort of like us against them mentality when it comes to the creepy scenes and everything, but you get this like cool mishmash of weirdos and misfits that all come together to support each other as well. And so it's not like the metal scene and the punk scene or anything. It's like, oh, here's the weird scene where whatever you're doing that doesn't fit in everywhere, it fits in here.
Right. Yeah. All have their kind of nooks and crannies and everything, different groups.
Exactly.
Yeah. Who are some talented local artists that you think deserve more spotlight?
Oh, there's so many. My some of my favorites. There's an electronic duo called Honeybeard that I absolutely love. They're friends of ours, and they make some beautiful, sort of Depeche Mode-esque synth pop, but it's also got a little bit of The Doors in it, and it's also got a little bit of that sort of Nirvana-esque or Sonic Youth-esque attitude to it, even if it's not in sound.
Cool.
There's an awesome electronic musician who makes really cool, chill, sort of ambient music called Ainsworth that we collaborated with a couple of times recently as well.
Okay.
And he's just a brilliant musician. And then I've been going out to a lot of, when I can, when they've happened, some shows recently with Bioctopi, who are an amazing punk rock band. Lucid Smog Disorder, a really cool, nice, loud punk rock band. Morgan's band, the Starship Experience, they're just a hugely fun, sort of, you know, a party good time feeling band, and I love that about them. There's way too many for me to name, but I could go on for, you know, the rest of the hour he was talking about this great band.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's literally limitless.
And I've been so surprised by what I found, too, because I think when pre-pandemic, it was hard to, there were so many shows happening all the time, and there was so much to see and go to. And I would try to go to shows as often as I can, but you still couldn't take in the breadth of it. And I was never an internet guy, but sitting around during the pandemic, during lockdown, and having a new band of my own to sort of be out there promoting, I've gotten to find out about a lot of artists and areas of the Toronto music scene that I maybe wouldn't have gotten to from going to shows at the Bovine or Cherry Colas, and that maybe exist in sort of like weird, more basement spaces and things like that that were just sort of out of my wheelhouse. And being exposed to that has brought me to other artists from there, and it's there's so much going on in the city that it's mind blowing. So, and so much of it is so mind blowingly good. I'm buying records off Bandcamp, you know, at least once a week because I'm falling in love with a new band, and they're all from Toronto or near Toronto, and it's amazing.
That's awesome. I love hearing that.
It's nice to see that, I don't know, that people are still creating. People think of the music industry as being kind of a dying animal, and that people don't go to shows or that, you know, this and that. And you hear a lot of negative talk, and there's reasons for that, and I understand a lot of the reasoning behind that, but there is so much vitality out there that, you know, no matter what sort of adversity people are facing in terms of getting music out there and reaching audiences, they're creating this beautiful, pure songs and shows and records that, I don't know, I feel very revitalized personally just by seeing what's happening.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Who's a dream collaborator of yours? And like, totally go big on this one. Just imagine anybody.
Collaborator. Okay, so I have my choice. So I would have to probably be a little predictable, and if I had to choose someone to collaborate with simply because I'd want to see how they work, it would probably be Thom Yorke.
Okay, yeah.
I think that like the way he can write the most beautiful songs that are sing-alongs on an acoustic guitar, but also create these amazing textures on his solo records that are more electronic. And the way he puts together melodies and words, that's just someone I'd like to see how their mind works for a little while. I'd like to be around them. So a collaboration would be a good excuse for that. I'd be like, yeah, show me what you got. And then I'd just be very quiet for, you know, the next few days while he created something and I got to think of it.
Who's a local artist that you love to collaborate with?
Yeah, there's so many. So there's this is a little bit of a cop-out, but it's a good cop-out. There's a local duo called Voxomnia, and they happen to be, they're both Mike and Anna, the two members. We were in a band together called the Dearly Breath. So I have collaborated with them, technically, before. But I'd like to collaborate with them again, with us each bringing our own sort of individual projects to it, because they are so brilliantly talented. I love the music that they've made on their own. And frankly, because I want to, they put out a record a few years ago and they've been pretty quiet since, and I want to hear what's been building up in their head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd love to see that, honestly.
I've been prodding them. I've been like, hey guys, do you want to maybe put together a song? Hey, do you want to maybe like work on a remix? Hey, do you want to, get together and jam a little bit? And like, so far they've been busy. They have lives. They bought a house. They got engaged. But one of these days I'll get them in a room and we'll create something again together.
Oh yeah. Keep poking. Keep trying for sure. Yeah. Where did the name Blackout Orchestra come from?
That's a bit of a silly thing. We've been trying to come up with a band name for a while. I think for a while it was just going to be you, me, and a Casio or something along those lines. And then eventually you're like, well, we should get an actual band name. What should we call it? I don't know. And we hummed and hawed for a while. And we literally went to an online band name generator. And we just kept pressing refresh until it came up with one that we liked. So it popped up with Blackout Orchestra. And we were like, yes, that sounds good. That's evocative. We can use that. And then we should have done like a Google search. We didn't. We just started putting stuff out. And it turns out there was a band from Perth, I think, that were called The Blackout Orchestra.
Ooh.
I'm emphasizing the because that's, legally the difference.
Mm-hmm.
They're not active anymore, and I think they were like sort of a punk rock band. I don't think there'd be any confusion, but I was like, I'll bet they went to the same band name generator and hit refresh until it came up with that.
I'd like to think so. And I mean, yeah, if they were tired, then hey, might as well take it.
I figure our audience and their audience would be very different, besides being from different continents, different styles of music. I figure, hopefully they'll let us take that one.
It's fair game,
we shouldn't
for
be
sure.
talking about it on the air here in case somehow it gets out to them and they sue us.
Oh, well, it's fair game. You're fine. How did the group begin, and what roles do you and Morgan play?
She's been a friend of mine, and we've been in and out of each other's lives for 14 years, before most recently, around the time, just a little while before the first lockdown, we got together. And we'd romantically been involved sometimes and on and off throughout the years. And this time it just clicked. It was the right time in our lives. And so we got together and we were... So she decided to stay with me during the lockdown. And we had a lot of time on our hands, and she was in another band. She still is, Starship Experience. And they decided to do live streams every week. And so because I'd been in bands before, they had asked me, well, since you're, there in the room with Morgan, do you want to be the opener and play some songs? And so I played some songs from my past band. And I figured it was time to start writing some songs, I guess, because we're doing these live streams and I should probably have some new stuff to play. And that's really how that started. And Morgan and I had been talking, and she had, we've been fans of each other's bands throughout the years. So she said, I'd really like to make music with you. And I said, okay, well, I'll start working on some songs and we'll see if we can, start an actual project or band together, a side project or something like that. So that's sort of how I started. This is how I started writing what would become Blackout Orchestra.
Yeah.
But in terms of the actual, I guess what I think of as the start of the project, it was as it is now, was largely when I started writing those songs, and then I got a phone that had a recording, the ability to have a recording app. I'd always had a really old sketchy blackberries, and I got the newest blackberry, which is still kind of old and sketchy, but that could handle a recording application. And I'd never had access to do that before, so I figured I'd do some acoustic demos, and then I found out it had all these bells and whistles, and I was learning the ins and outs of that in production, so I bought some microphones and things like that. It was, again, just kind of a fun, just write some songs, do some demos kind of idea. And as it was happening, I had a few months prior gone through a breakup that was came at the end of a relationship that was a difficult relationship, and not just because of the relationship itself, but because of the fact that we were both suffering from addiction, we were both dealing with depression and anxiety and things like that. And so I had all these sort of things that I'd gotten sober, I'd gotten healthier, and I was feeling relatively happy, but I had all these sort of unaddressed lingering feelings from all those experiences that I didn't know I needed to come out of me. And it wasn't until I started writing songs just for the fun of creating songs that some of this stuff started just kind of automatically coming up. And that's really where I think the Blackout Orchestra took an identity, because the project sort of told me what it needed, which was, or I guess I just, my subconscious told me what I needed, which was to get these feelings and these thoughts out of me and to deal with them and address them in some way, as opposed to just sort of ignoring them and pushing them down. And that's really sort of, that's how Blackout Orchestra became, I think, what I think of the band as now, which is something that hopefully therapeutic, positive way to deal with trauma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you've actually provided the listeners tonight with a little sneak peek of your unreleased single, It's Fine. First off, thank you for, you know, providing that. And, secondly, what's the meaning behind the track?
So it was a little bit, Morgan and I, speaking of how we have different tastes in music, we also have very different personality, and she's very free-spirited and very fly by the seat of her pants. I really appreciate that about her, but it can sometimes be very frustrating. She doesn't have a great memory. She often breaks plans unknowingly because of that. It often moves to things. I mean, we each other about it, about how I'm so sort of regimented and she's so free-spirited, but the crux of that song was, it's exaggerated because it was meant to be almost teasing her, but there was just a couple nights in a row where she had broken plans with me, and I wrote a song about that, so I brought it to her afterwards when she came home, and I was like, hey, so don't take offense, but this is kind of what I came up with based on the last couple of days. And she was like, oh, I'm just glad you wrote a song about me. I don't care that it's kind of, you know.
Nice. Yeah.
and I, like I famous before, she then added to it and made it better. And she added the little phone message at the beginning that just kind of brings it all together. And, you know, it's meant to be good natured, but it's also the speed of the feeling of like a little frustration is there, and that's where that kind of grew out of and came from, I think.
Yeah, oh, definitely. When will the single be officially dropping?
That is a... That is out of my control. There's a label that we are working with for the single in the UK. This awesome, independent label called Quick Fix Recording.
Okay.
So, this single, because it was very not like our normal style, they have a monthly singles club where they send out a digital single a month in advance of it actually coming out and to the people who signed up for this club. And so I knew it was sort of like the perfect song for that kind of thing, because it's really very much a standalone song as opposed to part of a larger narrative. So it's out to those singles club members now. It's supposed to come out on Bandcamp August 29th, but it might be September 5th. I'm not sure if they've even decided just yet. When we talked about it last, our sort of contact at the label, he was saying, we'll figure it out. I think it's the 29th.
So yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's the 29th.
Yeah, sure. No problem. yeah, of course. I'll definitely update everybody on my socials when it comes out. Yeah, of course. Yeah. So we're going to hit pause on this conversation for a quick second and play everyone a special track. It's Fine is an unreleased single from Blackout Orchestra about hiding feelings of resentment from your partner.
Thank you.
anyone just joining us, this is Hot Shots On Air, and tonight I'm speaking with Toronto-based musician Benjamin Van Buskirk of alt-rock band Blackout Orchestra. So I saw that you recently sat down with O Canada Creative for an interview and acoustic set. How did you connect with them, and how was that process?
I think I found them probably originally on Instagram through other local musicians. I know they did a set with Dan Greer, who's someone that my previous bands have played shows with for years and years. And so I know I had checked them out. I don't know if it was that or if it was earlier than that. It was probably earlier than that. But I just really loved what they were doing. I think that they capture musicians so beautifully. The visuals are beautiful and everything sounds beautiful. And I just had seen a few of their videos, and at some point I went onto their website just to take a look at more. And it was, hey, do you want to be featured? Send us an email. So I got in touch with them, and I guess they had paid some attention to us and what we were doing as well. So we just sort of touched base that way. And it took a little bit of scheduling. The weather wasn't working with us. I think there were 2 weeks in a row that we were going to film, and at the last minute it was pouring rain. But we managed to make it happen. And they're amazing people to work with.
Awesome. That's beautiful. Do you think companies like this are important for local arts communities?
Absolutely. There's some things, as an independent musician, you can record at home, and you can, with some decent camera equipment, put together some of your own videos and then do live streams. And we've seen lots of that over the past year, and it can be done very interestingly. But I think a lot of musicians are trying to be sort of and rightly so, because you have to be a jack of all trades. You have to be the person, especially if you're on a budget, to create all your own content, your own videos and things like that. And I think that a lot of us, like I've done that myself, and when you work with someone like Bruce and Emily, or other people who have really spent the time to figure out the ins and outs of how to make a great presentation in that way, it takes a lot of the weight off your shoulders in having to go through a learning curve to make it look, competent on your own. And I think that I have a bit of a skewed view, because as an independent musician, I can hear a lo-fi demo or see someone who's recorded a video on their phone, and I can see all the potential and see it as a fully realized thing. But I think when you're trying to reach new ears and new audiences, and there's such a glut of new music out there every day, that to stand out, you really need the best. You need to present yourself the best way you can. And so when you work with people who are other artists, but they're visual artists who can make the videos that you're doing look to top level and really just present you at your best, it makes you stand out in a way. It really helps. I think it helps people just hear you and see you better, and give you, a little bit more time, that 30 seconds to decide whether or not they're interested in what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's really important at this point, to capture someone's attention for more than a couple of seconds so that they can hear what you have to offer.
Yeah. It really helps kind of beef up that that press kit as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Everything that you can create that's we collaborate with someone and create something with some high quality content. And I hate calling it content, but but it's a thing. If you can create it, every little bit of that helps sort of legitimize you, I think, as an artist, and shows people that there are people paying attention to what you're doing, and maybe they will start to pay attention to you because of that. And it's a weird game. The whole promotion thing, but it's something you have to do as an independent artist, and And there's ways to do it really kind of, there's ways to do it with Disney.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm very familiar with that area, so. So you were a part of a project from this summer, a compilation album called Save Toronto Music Venues, and it's a charity compilation album. How did you become a part of that?
That was, it was sort of by happenstance. I had been talking with a few local musicians, including by Octopi. And we were talking about sort of creating a little Toronto music collective. And that never quite came to fruition, but we had talked about a lot of ideas, and one of them was compilation. And then by Octopi ended up hooking up and talking with Ashley from Save Toronto Music Venues and collaborating. And that was one of the ideas that they decided to go ahead with, was to put together a local Toronto music compilation and have all the proceeds go to this fund to save various Toronto music venues. And so because we were already friends there, we got to meet and start talking with Ashley and became friends with her. And then suddenly they were putting out the CD and we were on it. It's great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a really cool project. What did you produce for the project?
What they used from us was something that we had already recorded just at home. It was just a version of Siren Song.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I didn't have much involvement or anything in the ins and outs. That was really Kyla and Ashley who took the who deserve all the credit for everything with that compilation. We just had to send them a WAV file.
Yeah, yeah, sounds great. So I know that...
It's easy on our end, but it's a great thing to be, you know, associated with and a part of. I do feel very good about that.
Oh, exactly, yeah. So, you know, I know it was like an exclusive, release. How was the, I don't know if I can call it a turnout, but, you know, how were the results and like the feedback of that?
It's been exciting to see, because again, without being directly involved, I don't see the sort of day-to-day numbers in regards to it. But I do end up seeing a lot of the posts and people online posting about having the CD and what they, you know, the songs that they're loving on it. And it seems to, I was shocked to a certain degree that many people owned a CD for the first time since probably 2004.
Very true.
But yeah, it seems to be very well received and rightly so. I literally bought a copy and then bought my mom a copy. And it's a great collection of songs. There's some amazing, we've been talking about amazing Toronto artists, and a lot of them are on that compilation.
Oh yeah, for sure. Speaking of, what is your favorite Toronto venue?
Oh, so I have to qualify this with a different sort of size venue. My favorite relatively larger venue is the Danforth Music Hall. I just think it has great sight lines, has great sound, and every show there that I've seen, it's a great room for it. And I also have, of course, like most Toronto, it's a huge soft spot for Massey Hall, because that's, of course, a great sounding room. But when it comes to actual, like, venues that we play, the smaller venues, the smaller rooms that are really well curated, the one we've played most is probably Cherry Cola's. It's, you know, it's got such an aesthetic, and they're so generous with local music and, you know, across many genres, and pretty much every night of the week, you can go in there and see a local band playing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely one of my favorites. There's also Seascape down in the Junction. When they had moved to their new location, this new a couple of years ago, but newer, they had an upstairs, and it's got this really awesome stage, really good sound system, cool lighting. It's cool because it's a sort of a nerd bar, and I'm a nerd. So
awesome,
things,
yeah.
You know, sort of geeky and comic book and sci-fi. But the upstairs is this beautiful stage with, you know, red curtain and the beautiful sounding system. That's definitely when when shows are happening a little more regularly. That's kind of where I want to put together the first full band Blackout Orchestra show, is on that stage.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to that.
It's in the works. One of these days it'll happen. I really do want to have at least one or two shows where it's a full band with drums and bass, and as opposed to being the acoustic duo. I love doing the acoustic duo thing that we do, but some of the songs on the record, I'd really like to recreate sort of the full band feel of them with actual musicians and see what they come up with to augment it as well.
Oh yeah, that'd be killer. Yeah. What can we look forward to seeing from you?
Well, I'm just at the tail end of finishing up our second record.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
That's probably a ways off, a few months off still, but just finishing up some vocals for that. That's going to be the opposite of It's Fine. It's going to be there's nary a chorus to be seen. It's very, I'm going to call it our David Lynch record.
Okay. Okay.
You know, while I'm being a pretentious artist about this, it's very sort of hazy and dreamlike in sound and lyrics, and yeah, it'll be interesting to see what people who like the first record think of this, because it's definitely still us, and you can tell it's us, but it's definitely going in a very different, a little more ambient, but also a little more beat driven and a little more off kilter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious. I'm curious to see what people think of it. Maybe it'll be terrible and we'll never put out another record again after it. But I feel good about it right now.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it. And thank you so much for talking with me tonight. This was great.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, anytime. So everyone listening, you can find Ben and Morgan on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Bandcamp, and all streaming services under Blackout Orchestra. And we're going to wrap up this episode with another single from Blackout Orchestra. Siren Song is a track from 2021 about acting like everything is normal amid an emotionally vacant relationship.
Hey guys, this is Ben Van Busker from Blackout Orchestra. You're listening to Hot Shots on Air on 101.5 The Hawk.